Welcome to the ISF Podcast from the Information Security Forum. The ISF Podcast is hosted by ISF CEO Steve Durbin. And every episode he brings listeners features timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. This episode is the second in a special four-part series focusing on the ISF's latest report, Threat Horizon 2025, Scenarios for an Uncertain Future. Last week, we offered an overview of the report, and if you haven't listened to that yet, you might want to start there. Today, we dive into the first of three of the known unknowns outlined in the report, The Future of Work, Location and Technology Collide. Steve, good to see you today. Thanks for coming back for the second in our doom and gloom light report. Tell me more about the collision of location and technology. I mean, obviously, since COVID, hybrid work has become enormously popular. It's become established. But there are lots of things to think about. So start us off.
Yeah, sure. And it's been a significant change. I think we have to say that. You know, the fourth industrial revolution powered by technology is certainly here. And it has the potential to change the way people work in ways that are very hard to imagine, I think, from just a sort of standing start. You know, the new blend of in-office, remote, hybrid working, catalyzed, as you say, by the global pandemic, is also going to continue to lead to major changes in working life and culture.
Mm. You know, it seems like some businesses have been able to fully embrace remote working or a hybrid alternative, and others are rolling back or trying to roll back to pre-pandemic ways of full-time office attendance. So we've got a real mix now.
That's right, we have. And it's interesting to watch, isn't it? Ultimately, you know, I think organizations will eventually end up having determined the best course of action for themselves. But there's still a lot of what I would call experimentation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultimately that best course of action has to factor in things like costs, benefits, you know, the risks of each. Meanwhile, of course, let's not forget the other side. Some workers have completely reassessed the value of their work-life balance. And some will hesitate at the thought of long and expensive commutes during an economic crisis and indeed beyond. While some will be wary of continued proximity to other people, fearful of another pandemic. The 21st century has seen rapid change in the world of work as computing and machinery become ubiquitous. Automation's already been utilized in the replacement of simple and mundane jobs to really get over some of those repetitive tasks, such as those found perhaps in car manufacturing production lines and so on. This trend will continue, but artificial intelligence, as we're beginning to see with things like ChatGPT and all of the discussion around that, could prove far more disruptive, with the potential to replace humans, maybe in even more skilled jobs than we're currently imagining.
Mm-hmm. I see that a lot. And creative jobs, not just technologically skilled, but artistically creative jobs. I have AI encroaching on my own
work. Oh, absolutely. And for, you know, if you look at members who've downloaded the Threat Horizon report, they'll see that the graphic that we've used on the front of that is AI-generated art. So, yeah, the creative jobs are certainly not safe.
No, they're not. The report identifies four dangerous scenarios around this collision of technology and work location. And the first of those is outsourcing everything. So talk to us about that first dangerous scenario.
Yeah, and the worry here is that continued remote working strongly dilutes corporate identity and engenders disillusionment among staff. Mm. The global economic situation prompts businesses to look to the technology they already have in place to cut costs rather than make new investments.
Hmm. So let's take a look at a couple of specific threats that arise from this scenario. First, there's the threat of disengagement, discouraging secure behavior, which is a big threat. So explain that a bit more, please.
Well, by embracing remote working, organizations may reduce costs by downsizing or completely giving up office space. But a lack of real human contact among staff has ultimately a negative impact on corporate culture. So disengagement between employees and their employer has adverse effects on their attitudes towards the organization and, by extension, security. And that increases the risk of an insider threat, either by accident or indeed through malice.
And then outsourcing everything amplifies supply chain risk. And that one really makes sense. As offices are closed, organizations are reducing costs by outsourcing as many essential services and tools and tasks as they possibly can, which improves flexibility, but it also increases the risk of protracted disruption as control over key infrastructure is diminished. Now, Steve, a lot of people might be listening to this and recognizing that these trends are in their own companies. So lest we leave people in despair, we promised we wouldn't, let's talk a little bit about how organizations can prepare to deal with the threats inherent in outsourcing everything.
Organizations with teams that spend all or most of their time working away from the office will have to carefully consider how this arrangement affects their company's overall culture and security culture specifically. So engagement with employees here will be absolutely key. Encouraging teamwork, mandating perhaps the use of video in team meetings that are held on a regular basis. Those are just two examples. Policies around bring your own device, again, something that at the ISF we've been talking about for many, many years now, are going to have to be probably even more robust than in the past, subject to controls and strictly policed. The exclusive use of cloud providers for hosting and data storage will provide businesses with greater flexibility. But consideration must be given to how it also opens them up to a greater risk of compromise, as well as availability concerns via single points of failure. And as the level of outsourcing increases, supplier security contracts will increasingly become more and more important. They will need to be thorough and subject to detailed due diligence. Ongoing supplier risk assessments, too, will have an important role to play as suppliers adapt to the realities of this scenario.
So what are some short-term action steps that organizations can take today, right away?
Well, short-term, we recommend that organizations update their security awareness programs to factor in the prescribed working arrangements for the organization, whether that be office-based, hybrid, remote, whatever it is. They also will want to ensure that relevant plans and contingencies are in place and included in business continuity planning for any key outsourced infrastructure. And they should begin the process of reviewing current supply chain arrangements and contracts and enhance the ongoing onboarding of new suppliers.
So what should they be thinking about for longer-term solutions?
Well, we advise that organizations consider culture-building exercises for remote staff, such as regular team calls with video cameras switched on, as I said before, to create and maintain this sense of togetherness. They should also be reviewing service-level agreements on critical outsourced infrastructure and services, ensuring alignment to mission-critical activities, recovery time objectives, recovery point objectives. And finally, they need to establish clear guidance on the use of managed outsourced suppliers, including an acceptable level of assurance and oversight pre, mid, and importantly, post-contract, as well as including these suppliers in their business continuity planning.
So let's move on to the next scenario in this category of the future of work. And that's an interesting one. The fake employee. Obviously, investment and advances in technology combined with businesses' adoption of remote work, all of that opens up a world of opportunity in the labor market. But it's not always possible to verify the identity and authenticity of new hires. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. And what's interesting is that the threats we're talking about here, you know, would have been considered absolutely absurd even, I don't know, 10 to 15 years ago.
Totally.
But between this sort of remote work and a gig economy, they've become very real. And for a lot of people, it is the way that they work today. And so the first threat here is that a lack of identity verification enables imposters. So new technology allows job applicants to utilize deepfakes in video interviews and engage AI to perform large parts of their roles. And this lack of visibility and verification opens the organization up to a wide range of threats, enabling imposters to compromise information pretty much at will.
That is not absurd, but it sounds absurd. So in that case, you don't know who's working for you, and the next threat is you don't know where they are, And then there's the threat of digital nomads leaving a trail of vulnerabilities. This is sci-fi, Steve.
Yeah, it's pretty much. But, you know, that's generally the way that we've emerged and evolved. And the introduction of new and, what has to be said, favorable tax rules for remote workers with a penchant for travel encourages them to change location on a regular basis. You know, constantly showing up in different geographies, organizations are never sure which internet service provider they're using, what security controls they use, or what procedures they face in, say, the airports they pass through, the coffee shops they visit.
All right. Then finally, there's the threat of moonlighting microservice providers profiting from conflicts of interest. Tell us more about that threat. That sounds complicated.
Yeah, I don't know, it's that complicated. I mean, all the freedom enjoyed by workers gives rise to a new technical gig economy with services offered by the hour, by people who work on a casual basis, often, of course, without sound background checks. Some full-time employees use their evenings and weekends to dabble in second jobs, maybe working for competitors in direct violation of conflict of interest protocols, and by so doing, putting both parties at risk. Availability of staff is hit when competitors offer gig workers higher rates of pay and second jobbers burn out and take time off sick.
Hmm. So what can organizations do to fight back against these threats?
Well, there's a few things here. First of all, hiring managers must be made aware of how technology can be used to hijack the recruitment process, particularly when interview processes are only enacted virtually. In the current market, where, of course, we're all clamoring for sometimes the same workers, it's very easy to gloss over some of these things. Once a new employee has been onboarded, ongoing ID and verification checks will be vital in this future world of work to combat the risk of the new hire being replaced by a nefarious actor or even a non-sentient entity such as an AI model. User and entity behavior analytics can be particularly helpful here.
So you're telling me that the robots are literally coming for our jobs?
Well, not exactly. That comes a little bit later in the report.
Oh, okay.
But in this scenario, quite a few organizations are going to have to introduce new policies for highly mobile members of the workforce, prescribing a list of internet service providers deemed acceptable, providing things like 5G dongles for areas with good connectivity, and mandating nations or airports or locations that must be avoided. The continuing use of protective technologies such as point-to-point public network tunnels or secure access service edges will be essential in this scenario.
Is there also a way to ensure that employee contracts prohibit workers from taking on a second job, or if they do, that they are prohibited from working for a competitor?
Yeah, absolutely. And where it makes sense for the business to utilize microservice providers in the technology space, it should consider the likelihood of the contractor working with probably a large number of their competitors and ensure that they're given access only to the data they absolutely require to complete the tasks they're hired for. Contracts with these providers should also really stipulate that any intellectual property they create cannot be duplicated or reused in part or in whole for other organizations. But that's all well and good. You're going to have to police it, because just having it written into a contract isn't necessarily going to prevent it happening. And if you have something of a reputation for not policing it, that word will also get out very rapidly.
This is a longer conversation that we've had before, we'll have again, but so much comes down to trust and integrity. I think we need to do more episodes about how to attract people with integrity and who are interested in developing trust, because without those two things, the threat landscape gets a whole lot nastier.
Well, the trust issue is one that will continue to evolve and morph in line with what becomes acceptable business practice, what becomes acceptable social practice. And I think it's always a mistake to try to divorce these two things. You know, in the past, we've talked a lot about the way that technology influences behavior and so on. And for me, this is a classic example of that. We're just having to change, I think, as we go forward. But you're absolutely right. Trust is central, and I think will remain so.
Hmm. So what are some actions that companies can take today that will help them in the next few months, the sort of near future?
Well, first, organizations need to fall back on that old chestnut of creating clear policies. Simply put, you know, let's list out countries that employees cannot be sourced or authorized to work from, as well as establishing methods to explicitly verify a staff member's country of origin and residence. And they will need to ensure that checks are regularly reviewed. They'll probably want to develop a method of continuous identity verification, including things like regular video chats to give assurance that employees are who they say they are. And businesses themselves can use deepfake identification tools to weed out imposters. Then they need to ensure all offsite employees use organization-approved methods of connection, maybe virtual private networks, whenever they access company data or resources.
I know you advised earlier that companies need to ensure that the employment contracts reflect the organization's views on employees taking additional employment. Does the ISF have any other recommendation for what they should do in the long term around that issue?
Well, when employing contractors, organizations must ensure that access to systems and data is locked down to the bare minimum required for the contractor to complete the tasks for which they are hired. They should apply data at rest encryption to all sensitive data on an employee's devices, ideally at a hardware level, for example, whole disk encryption. And finally, we recommend that they consider implementing user and entity behavior analytics to monitor for anomalous or suspicious activity or behavior.
So have the AI check on the employees not being AI.
That's right.
Use tools.
That's right. And we've talked about that before as well. You know, having AI police AI.
We have. It's a brave new world. That brings us to the third risky scenario under the future of work, which is the good old days. I mean, don't we all love the good old days? What's the ISF's problem with the good old days?
Well, the nostalgia for the good old days is nice for a song or maybe a poem, I suppose. But, you know, this is the Threat Horizon Report. So naturally, we're looking at the more sinister side of things. The dire ongoing global economic situation combined with the cost of returning to office work hampers investment in technology. We're seeing that across all of the technology providers worldwide at the moment. The demand to return to office working leaves many staff feeling unhappy, posing a very human risk to security.
There are two threats to consider in this scenario, and the first is that inflexibility inhibits security recruitment and retention. So talk about that.
Yeah. Businesses that insist on a return to the office, especially for roles that could be hybrid or fully remote, see high rates of attrition and long-term unfilled vacancies in the security team. Lack of skilled resource affects staff availability, making burnout of existing staff much more likely. And this leads to lower security performance and raises information risk across the organization.
And then the breakdown in security culture increases the insider threat. And this is something we've talked about on the podcast before. Disgruntled employees no longer respect security practices and exhibit even a blatant disregard for policies. And when blended with high levels of attrition and gaps in critical skills and competencies across the business, the threat of a successful attack using an employee as a vector through just apathetic behavior, or an employee who is coerced or being the assailant themselves, all of that increases significantly. So it sounds like organizations that require a wholesale return to the office need to be mindful of the impact that may have on staff morale and the entire company's culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Disgruntled staff will not take security seriously and will have very little interest in protecting organizational assets, even going so far as causing willful damage to those assets as an act of attrition or protest. Some individuals may be tempted to sell company data or offer the keys to the kingdom, so organizations really have to be on top of access rights and have controls in place that monitor who views and downloads key data assets.
Because some employees can have massive impact, taking things very far.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, you know, the strength of disharmony among the workforce could be so strong in this future that we're recommending any further changes to working practices should be planned and implemented as if dealing with an industrial relations incident. As such, flexible working arrangements for security staff and the broader IT function may be necessary to attract and retain particularly hard-to-find skill sets. The human resources team will have a key role to play in understanding and managing sentiment across the organization.
So a short-term action plan will include, as you said, ensuring that identity and access management processes are regularly reviewed, which will ensure that anyone who leaves will have their access rights removed as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And in addition, we recommend that organizations identify the single points of failure and knowledge in the organization. They need to perform knowledge transfer and succession planning activities to mitigate the risk of loss of knowledge and or look at retention strategies for those key staff. They should also take the risk of insider threat seriously and implement and test technical controls around access rights, for example, identity and access management, privileged access management, and user and entity behavior analytics.
And longer term?
Well, we're advising organizations to encourage a pulse check of employee feeling and use this knowledge to plan and mitigate the risk from any potential industrial actions, security, or attrition challenges. We also want to reinforce security culture through focused campaigns across the organization, but recognize that stabilizing the core workforce culture may take priority.
And I'd imagine that it would also help to work on greater employee retention overall.
That's right. Organizations need to work with employees to do things like improve morale with pay and benefits packages. But not just that. It's all about opportunities as well to enhance the work-life balance.
All right. I feel like there's so much we could say about that, but that will be a whole series in itself as well. Now to our last dangerous scenario under this category of the future of work, and that's the rise of the machines.
Yeah, this is the part where the robots are taking our jobs that you've been looking forward to. I know it's a particular favorite of yours. You like this.
Absolutely.
Niche next-generation technology startups and incubator organizations are making waves across new vertical markets such as sustainable energy and biotech. Meanwhile, the more traditional technology industry is becoming stagnant. Some organizations are enforcing a return to the office, citing poor productivity and low engagement.
And the report then goes into three potential threats here, an over-reliance on automation that backfires.
Yeah. Organizations have access to new technology that promises to both streamline and bolster security defenses, but fails to deliver as effectively or as anticipated. The lack of human interaction and experience negatively reduces this contextual input to incidents and indicators of compromise, leading to substandard outputs that prompt incorrect responses.
And then implementing new technology too quickly and overloading responses, that can lead to unexpected problems, such as the overwhelming generation of unstructured data that lacks context, information overload that impacts the ability of data analysis and of security teams and incident responders to spot the relevant information they require, mine the relevant information they require.
And then third and finally, office working stimulates employee attrition. Being forced back to work in an office where automation, AI technologies, and machine learning are clearly being implemented to increase productivity by reducing headcount damages relationships with employees. Attrition rates will inevitably rise as skilled staff consider their futures, and the insider threat rises significantly.
So tell us how an organization should prepare for that.
Well, when replacing human workers with automation or AI, organizations will almost certainly consider the potential benefits of such a change. We're advising here that they should give equal consideration to what is lost by removing human critical thinking, imagination, and experience from affected processes.
That makes sense, and I appreciate hearing that you're encouraging that consideration. I know we've talked on the podcast many, many times about the fact that any business function largely or wholly replaced by a non-human workforce will be subject to programming errors, including unintentional biases. A larger reliance on machines with any degree of inbuilt connectivity, that also increases the size of the attack surface. So it's not all positive to replace humans with machines.
Precisely. Machines are only as good as the data they're fed. So some human level of management will be essential for any business critical process that primarily relies on automation or AI. Technology transformations within organizations must be carefully planned, especially if the organization is competing in highly innovative markets. And whilst there are big opportunities with such a gamble, there are also big risks. And the business needs to be fully aware of and share the burden of risk on new technology.
So in the short term, it seems like this is going to require some of the skills that we often refer to as soft that are actually really tough, like reading the room to make sure the business understands the feelings of their workforce prior to establishing business change plans and factoring that into risk mitigation.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that we talk about an increase in technology, an increase in machines, and yet come back always to talking about people and mm-hmm. having to manage their expectation and get the balance absolutely right. And to that end as well, we're also recommending that organizations establish a governance structure for their appetite and ability to ingest and consume innovations in technology, balanced against organizational risk appetite, capacity, and skill sets. They'll also need to consider how the limitations of computer-based decision-making defenses may place the organization at a disadvantage against human attackers. So the answer isn't to just have one approach. The answer is to get the balance right between artificial intelligence, machine learning, technology, and people. And that is going to be, in the short term anyway, exceptionally difficult to do.
Mm. And in the long term, what should companies plan for?
Well, businesses must ensure sufficient coverage of automation failure in business continuity and disaster recovery plans, and importantly, test that regularly. They need to take a strategic view of the long-term risks associated with an increasing reliance on technology and how that alters risk. And they must have a plan in place to assess the accuracy and integrity of data that drives business decisions.
Hmm. So a lot to do. And like you said earlier, some of these scenarios, even just 10 or 15 years ago, they would have seemed completely nuts. But technology is moving so fast, and we've changed how we work so rapidly out of necessity that these seemingly absurd, improbable scenarios are absolutely ringing true today.
Yeah, and as always with the Threat Horizon Report, we're focused on the actions that security professionals and business leaders can take right now so they can face these risks with confidence.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Listeners, you can find the Threat Horizon Report 2025, Scenarios for an Uncertain Future, at securityforum.org. And you can go back to Threat Horizon Reports from previous episodes of our podcast. You'll find those in our feed, and we'll link them in the show notes. Next week, Steve and I take a closer look at the second scenario, focusing on the future of data. We'll be back with a new episode next week. In the meantime, if you would take 10 seconds to pull up this podcast on whatever device you're listening, give us a 5-star rating and write a quick review, we'd be grateful. You can also listen to the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, which goes in-depth on the hottest topics in information security. In every episode, ISF analysts hand-select active security professionals from ISF member organizations to discuss how the implementation of ISF research is uniquely applied to their real-world context. We hope you'll listen, and of course, we'll put a link to that show in our show notes. If there's a topic or question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with senior producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Kayla Elrod, music by Alexander Filipiak. Thanks for listening.